Funerals can be challenging occasions, not just because they can be times of immense grief and sorrow, not just because they can often expose family relationships and memories, the bad as well as the good, but principally, they can be challenging because they force you to confront what you really believe. The Church of England funeral service would often start with these words from John chapter 11. I am the resurrection and the life, says the Lord. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. If heard, received, and truly believed, these words capture in just two sentences the hope we have in our Christian faith. Death is not God's plan. We were not born to die, but born to live, and through Jesus' death and resurrection, death has been defeated. When Jesus spoke these words, he wasn't saying to Martha and Mary that Lazarus would merely live by living on somehow in their hearts. He was saying that Lazarus could and would live again, that he would be bodily resurrected. Similarly, when Jesus told Jairus that his daughter, who had already been pronounced dead, that she would be saved, he wasn't talking in abstract or conceptual terms. He bodily raised her from the dead. And so it is with today's gospel reading, with Jesus appearing to the disciples in the locked room. When compared with John's account of the same event, the Gospel of Luke particularly captures and confronts us with the living bodily reality of Jesus' resurrection. Do we come here to expect to encounter the living or the dead? A memorial or an echo of a past relationship, a past faith, or instead an encounter with the one who was and is to come? Despite having heard and received the first two reports of Jesus' resurrection from Mary and the two disciples' experience on the road to Emmaus, when Jesus appears in their midst, they are convinced he is a ghost, an echo, an ethereal memory or shadow of someone, perhaps even recognized as someone they once knew. But no, we are left in no doubt by the gospel account. Jesus helps them in their disbelief by asking for and eating some fish in front of them. It is Jesus, alive with real flesh and bones. But more than this, this wasn't somehow a Mark II Jesus, a Jesus 2.0. This was the very same Jesus that they knew and loved. He bore the scars, and he let them touch them. The scars were the physical signs that showed his friends that he was the same one who had journeyed with them all the way to the cross and through the cross. This is key to our own understanding of what it means to be a disciple of Christ. If the Jesus who died was historical, but the one who the disciples now follow is a different, eternal Christ, then we simply bask in the spiritual afterglow of the cross, rather than our being called to live the way of the cross, a life that calls us to risk ourselves as we engage with the world and in the issues of the world. The Jesus they knew before the cross wasn't simply a memory. The very same person was standing in front of them now. Memories can be malleable where living people are not. I'm a big Beatles fan, and I remember watching a clip of documentary interview footage with George, Paul and Ringo, reminiscing about some of their earliest times together in Liverpool and Hamburg. It was good to see three old friends enjoying their collective memories. But it was also made more interesting by seeing what one of them had forgot and the other had misremembered or remembered differently. memories they had were confronted and sometimes unseated by the reality of their old friend sitting there right in front of them. So it is for us today. If we merely remember Jesus, we can remember the bits that suit us, our favourite bits, and quietly drop the bits that we don't care to recall. But if we continually seek to encounter the living Jesus, we must be prepared to be unsettled, encouraged, commissioned, and possibly even corrected. It's worth considering for a moment if whether the merely remembered Jesus, the collectively imagined Jesus, or even the ghost of Jesus would have been capable of giving the disciples their commission to tell all nations. Would the memory of Jesus have been enough to cause the disciples to risk the rest of their lives? Finally, let me ask you, did you come here today expecting something old or something new? Don't answer. This is a trick question. When we hear Jesus speak to the disciples, we hear that there is no such thing as old and new. Jesus tells us that they are one and the same. He is both the old and the new. Just as he did on the Emmaus Road, he helps them to see that everything that has happened, everything that he has done, has been in accordance with the scriptures. He is the beginning and the end. He is the thread that connects the old story with the new story. But more than that, he then passes that thread on to the disciples and asks them to continue the story. You are witnesses. Tell all the nations of what you know, he says. So new pages continue to be written. First, quite literally, in recording the Acts of the Apostles and the rest of the New Testament scriptures. But the challenge continues with us today. The baton has been passed down through the ages and is now passed to us to be part of the continuing story of the mission of God. At Jesus' direction and following his lead, we have been told the story so far. And we've also been told the ending. The spoiler is that we know that it turns out all right in the end. And we are called to act out his story today, to improvise the missing pages of the play. So there is no new and old, no contemporary and traditional. There is but one story, one Jesus. So as we gather together this morning, just as the disciples gathered in that same upper room, and joined together in the Holy Communion, let our prayer be that we may encounter afresh the risen Christ and be ready to hear his direction and call on our lives and the life of his church.